You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
I don't need to wait another minute, let alone an hour, to take common sense steps that will save the lives in the future and to urge my colleagues in the House and Senate to act. We can ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines in this country once again. I got that done when I was a senator. It passed. It was law for the longest time. And it brought down these mass killings. We should do it again. We can close the loopholes in our background check system, including the Charleston loophole. That's one of the best tools we have right now to prevent gun violence. The Senate should immediately pass. Let me say it again. The United States Senate, I hope some are listening, should immediately pass the two House-passed bills that close loopholes in the background check system.
President Biden speaking today about the deadly shooting in Colorado, March 23rd, 2021. He mentioned several things. First of all, the federal assault weapons ban that he said we need to have in place again, which we had at one time. It was a 10-year ban passed by the U.S. Congress on September 13, 1994, and then it was signed into law by then-U.S. President Bill Clinton the same day. It applied only weapons manufactured after the date of the ban's enactment, and then it expired September 13, 2004, because it had a sunset provision. Now, there have been numerous attempts since that time to reinstate the assault weapons ban. What is an assault weapon? Does that qualify for what took place in Colorado yesterday? Does it really make any difference? They're in response, I should say, to the president saying, I want the Senate to be listening. Senator Chuck Schumer has taken to the floor on the Senate and said, we are going to debate and address the epidemic of gun violence in the country. Every time there is a mass shooting, we're going to have more calls for more gun control and tighter restrictions. And there are some that are acceptable, but generally the laws are in place that would work if they're done correctly. Now, according to some reports, the shooting coming out of Colorado yesterday, the shooter in Boulder, Colorado, a 21-year-old, had purchased his weapon in the last 7 days. The House just last week passed a bill that would require a 10-day waiting period because it apparently, of course, links again to the Charleston shooting at that church, and they were saying that is a part of a loophole that need to be corrected. The Charleston shooting dealt with the fact that buyer, if he's not approved within 3 days, could then go ahead and get it at the end of 10 days. We're going to get into that in more detail, so I'm kind of rapidly putting out in front of you. This is not a time to really get belligerent about gun control, but it is a time to remain that we make sure Second Amendment rights are protected. The problem is, too many times something like this is going to be used to attack the Second Amendment. Rather than looking at criminals are not going to care about your gun control laws. It's against the law to shoot and kill somebody. So it doesn't make a difference what your gun control law is if someone's going to do that. We've got more guns in this nation than we have people. And we don't have a shooting every day. We don't have a mass shooting. Let me put it that way, a mass shooting every day. But it still says nothing to help those who are grieving right now, and one of them being a family of a police officer who rushed in to help yesterday. We're going to get into that over the next 2 hours. Also, we still have the Biden border crisis, which they will not acknowledge. James Carafano is going to join us from the Heritage Foundation, saying there are 5 steps could be taken that could really help with this border crisis if they would even acknowledge that it exists. And, of course, the homeless population is a massive issue. Going to be joined by a guest today that has written a book that he says in the title, No Way Home, there is a way to fix this homeless crisis with intelligence and humanity. That doesn't necessarily mean throw more and more money at it. And while we're talking about the homeless, what about those who are vets? We have 40,000 plus vets that are homeless. And we're giving money to help illegals coming into the country, so they're not homeless, but we're ignoring the vets who paid a price and served their country. We'll get into that issue for you as well. And I'll also go back in time to talk about that time I went, quote, homeless for a TV special. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Most of us are taking precautions to avoid COVID in public, but what are you doing to make sure your home is free of COVID? Wellington Environmental is the answer. And here's the great news. Wellington's average cost to professionally treat a home, less than $300. Less than $300. And the cost for treating most offices, not much higher. Be ready to copy a phone number to get on the schedule as soon as possible. First, let me remind you, if you want your own professional fogging device, Wellington sells them, priced $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors, save $100. If you want your home or office professionally disinfected by Wellington, here's the number, 314-644-4930. Again, get on the schedule early, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington, Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Well, I started out with one lone dollar, gambled with a man and I won me another, bought me a gun and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys, gonna be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
The first thing I want to say is I want to say our hearts of this community go out to the victims of this horrific incident. We know of 10 fatalities at the scene, including one of our Boulder PD officers by the name of Eric Talley, who's been on the Boulder Police Department since 2010. He's served in numerous roles supporting the Boulder Police Department and the community of Boulder. And I have to tell you, the heroic action of this officer when he responded to this scene. At 14:30 hours, the Boulder Police Department began receiving phone calls of shots fired in the area and a phone call about a possible person with a patrol rifle. Officer Talley responded to the scene, was the first on the scene, and he was fatally shot.
Those are the words of the Boulder Police Chief Maris Harold, having a hard time, and understandably, trying to keep her composure. As she described the shooting at the supermarket store in Boulder, Colorado, where 10 were killed, including the police officer. Officer Talley had been with the Boulder Police since 2010. He was the first to arrive, as you heard her say, and he was shot upon his arrival. The officer leaves behind 7 children, ranging in age from 5 to 18. In fact, the chief said she had the entire family in her office a couple of weeks ago to present an award to Officer Talley. Every police officer out there on duty now or will be going to duty on a shift later today or tonight, man or woman, black or white, regardless of their religion, and puts it all on the line for the community they serve. When you put on that badge, You say that you will stand in the gap between criminals and Americans who are simply trying to live their lives. Today, when President Biden was addressing the nation, he did take time to focus specifically on Officer Talley and the other officers across our nation.
I commend the exceptional bravery of Officer Eric Talley. I send my deepest condolences to his family, his close family and 7 children. You know, when he pinned on that badge yesterday morning, he didn't know what the day would bring. I want everybody to think about this. Every time an officer walks out of his or her home and pins that badge on, the family member that they just said goodbye to wonders whether they'll subconsciously, will they get that call, the call that his wife got. He thought he'd be coming home to his family and his 7 children. But when the moment the act came, Officer Tully did not hesitate in his duty, making the ultimate sacrifice in his effort to save lives. That's a definition of an American hero.
I agree with President Biden. This shooting yesterday follows the March 16 shooting that left 8 dead at 3 Atlanta-area massage parlors. So that's 2 mass shootings within this month. There are some other underlying concerns that I have regarding a comparison of these 2 shootings. I will come back to that later. But as you heard in the opening statement, and you're going to hear again shortly, President Biden is saying that we need to move forward with more gun control laws. And in specific, he also referred to the House bill. He said the Senate should act on the bills passed by the House last week. Well, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has pledged the Senate will take the gun control measure from the House and move quickly on it. He said, we will especially move to expand gun background checks, which has apparently had a hard time getting through the upper chamber. But according to Senator Schumer today, the Senate is going to debate and address the epidemic of gun violence in this country. Today, our hearts are with the people of Colorado and with everyone whose lives have been touched by gun violence. He said, we cannot seem to finish grieving one tragedy before another takes place. It is a reminder that we must confront a devastating truth in the U.S. An unrelenting epidemic of gun violence steals innocent lives with alarming regularity. According to the Gun Violence Archive, at least 19,223 have lost their lives due to gun violence in 2020. And that increase is a 25% jump from 2019. The House bill, as it was passed, there are a pair of bills, actually. They're aimed at expanding and strengthening background checks for gun buyers. They did get passed, regardless of Republican opposition. 2 votes fell largely along the party lines. One involves background checks for all gun buyers and extends the time the FBI has to vet those flagged by the National Instant Check System. And you also have a piece of legislation dealing with firearm checks to be sold to individuals. The Democrats first passed that legislation in 2019 after they got control of the House. And we've said all along, at some point, they're going to push to go the rest of the way. They say both pieces are simply aimed at addressing gaps in existing gun laws. That includes the so-called Charleston loophole, which I was referring to earlier, which restricts to 3 days the period the FBI has to conduct a background check. And they say that allows many buyers to evade a proper background check. They specifically point to Dylan Roof, the white supremacist who killed 9 at that historically black church in Charleston, South Carolina, in 2015. He bought a handgun, even though he should have been barred from doing so. So the bill would extend the amount of time the FBI has to complete a check from 3 days to 10 days. As it is now, if it don't get a response back in 3 days flagging it, the gun sale is often made. I personally don't have a big problem with additional time like that. The concern I have is, are you going to then start going for 2 weeks or a month or 2 months? And, of course, the other issue that is in play is the assault weapons issue. And what is an assault weapon? President Biden today brought that up in his address to the nation as he referred to what we had done in the Senate when I was a senator, and we need to do it again. Let's again hear from President Biden.
I don't need to wait another minute, let alone an hour, to take common sense steps that will save the lives in the future and to urge my colleagues in the House and Senate to act. We can ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines in this country once again. I got that done when I was a senator. It passed. It was law for the longest time. And it brought down these mass killings. We should do it again. We can close the loopholes in our background check system, including the Charleston loophole. That's one of the best tools we have right now to prevent gun violence. The Senate should immediately pass. Let me say it again. The United States Senate, I hope some are listening, should immediately pass the two House-passed bills that close loopholes in the background check system.
I want to make it clear that I do not believe changing or closing what they call the Charleston loophole from 3 days to 10 days will necessarily stop some shootings. In this case, if the suspect did in fact buy it just 7 days ago, well, then the question is, if there was any reason he should have been flagged, he would have gotten it anyway in another 3 days. And did he buy it with the intent of carrying the shooting out? We have a lot of information still to break out. And the name is raising questions, and I'll come back to that issue in a moment in reference to what we saw happen in Atlanta. But this federal assault weapons ban, as I was saying in the opening monologue, it was passed by Congress September 13, 1994. It was a 52-48 vote in the Senate, signed into law by President Bill Clinton the same day. It applied only to weapons to be manufactured after the date the ban was enacted. Then it expired September 13, 2004, because it had a sunset provision. There have been several constitutional challenges filed against provisions of the ban, all of those rejected by the courts, and there were also numerous attempts to renew it. None of those have succeeded. And according to numerous studies, the ban has had little effect during that time regarding criminal activity, firearm homicides, and so forth. And not necessarily having anything to do with the number of mass shootings, because they were actually down during that time, but no one can really say that's a direct cause and effect. Most of the shootings and killings in the nation happen. Individuals are groups, generally gangs, and people getting caught are domestic issues. And then when you have these mass shootings like that, but then everyone rushed forward and said, well, we need to have more gun control laws. Would that stop the shootings we've seen in Chicago? They have some of the toughest gun control laws in the nation. It doesn't stop them there because they have no intention of following any law. And following this latest shooting, former President Obama adding in a statement, it's long time past with those with the power to fight this epidemic of gun violence to do so. It will take time to root out the disaffection, racism, misogyny that fuels so many of these senseless acts of violence. And Senator Elizabeth Warren tweeting that the violence will not end until Democrats get rid of the filibuster and finally pass gun safety legislation. Again, the problem is this pushes and hastens people up, but if you stop and look at the killings in Chicago, in L.A., New York, San Francisco, gun violence, not one of those generally, I should say not one, not many of them would fall within any of the laws they want to propose. But what it would do for law-abiding citizens is put more of a clamp on them. Now, the quick reference I want to make, you saw with the Atlanta shooting, because the victims, for the most part, at the massage parlors, the Asian massage parlors, were Asian. And we suddenly had many start rushing out and saying this is evidence of hate for Asians, because Trump had said the Chinese flu, the China flu, reference COVID. That is such a far stretch. But if you're going to do that kind of stretch, then what are you going to do about this 21-year-old who carried out the shooting in Colorado? I never give names, but I'm going to in this case because I want you to consider this point. He's named Ahmed Al-Alawi Alisa. Ahmed Al-Alawi Alisa. I don't know. Muslim, possibly, by religion and or birth. I don't know. But you don't suddenly start blaming everyone with similar names, do you? Of course not. Unfortunately, the left likes to put all the shootings and all those involved in one little clean basket for them and say, this is why we have to have more anti-hate laws and put it all on Trump again. All right, coming up the next segment, we're going to turn the corner. I want to focus on the money for illegals while we've got homeless vets suffering in the street. What are we going to do to help our vets? Please stand by.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
What I don't understand is why we can allow our greatest heroes, our American veterans that have gone to fight for this country, that have gone and put their lives on the line, and then they come back home and have nowhere to go. And this administration is putting more money into people that have never contributed to this society. And to me, that is very heartbreaking.
Those are the words of David Hathcock. He is a former homeless vet, now working to help vets get housing and so forth. He's talking about we have an estimated 40,000 vets who are homeless. According to some of the latest stats regarding with overall homelessness in the U.S., on any given night, they estimate something like 553,700. 553,700 don't have a home on any given night. In fact, according to the percent of the U.S. population, based upon those numbers, you would look at something like 0.17% of our entire populace is homeless. And, of course, you have it most often in the urban areas. New York City is described as the highest, L.A. and L.A. County behind that, Seattle and King County, Washington, San Diego County, California, San Jose, Santa Clara County. A lot of those areas, of course, because many flock there. If you're going to be homeless, they want warmer weather than what you'd have in some of the northern states, if they can get there. Now, what Hathcock is upset over is he said the money we're going to be given to take care of illegals while we have all these vets are on the street. He's referencing the Biden administration giving ICE, Immigration and Customs, almost $87 million for hotel rooms near the border. That's to provide shelter and processing services for families not expelled from the U.S., but supposedly are in proceedings to be removed. They're giving the money through a Texas-based nonprofit group called Endeavors, and they're trying to provide something like 1,200 beds for that, plus COVID-19 testing. $87 million. I have to ask, do you need $87 million to take care of beds for 1,200 beds, basically, if that's what the count is? But I don't have all the facts and stats, so I just say I have a question about it. But we have to go back to the issue of we have this homeless issue all across the nation. Whether or not you're talking about vets, we have homeless people all across the nation who are U.S. citizens. And why do we have so many homelessness? Well, according to most studies, the prime reason is, one, lack of affordable housing. Apparently, they make some money, but are not enough to have an actual home or someplace they could stay on a regular basis. Two would be unemployment, which obviously would tie to that on what they're earning and if they have a job. Well, we had a very low unemployment until COVID hit. Now it's back up again. And three, poverty. Four, low wages, and apparently all in that order. That's according to the National Homeless Law Center. But what are we going to be able to do about it? And in fact, when you look at the ratio of homelessness at state population, at the highest, according to 2019 figures, you got state of New York, followed by Hawaii, and third, California. But we don't have places for vets that are out there. And that is, again, Hathcock says, where's the help for the vets? And they simply say, it's not going to be enough. They cannot get enough. But we are pouring the money in to help with the illegals. In the next segment, we're going to be joined by the author of a book titled No Way Home. It's the crisis of homelessness and how to fix it with intelligence and humanity. I want to hear that because what we've had so far is just throw more money at it. Throw money, throw money. Now, this may well involve money probably, but doing it intelligently, can we resolve the crisis of our homeless? That'll be coming up when we continue.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
When it comes to insects in the world, we are outnumbered. A University of Nebraska researcher estimates that there are 10 quintillion insects. That's a 10 with 18 zeros behind it. Now you know you need Rottler, Rottler Pest Solutions. Here's another fact. When one insect gets in your home, more will come and spread and multiply your kitchen, your bathroom, your bedroom. Call Rottler Pest Solutions immediately. Rottler, family owned and operated for three generations. If you've never used Rottler, I encourage you to start now. If you haven't used Rottler recently, do it now. This is the season when the invasion starts. And remember, we're outnumbered. Get help. Call Rottler, 877-ROTTLER. 877-ROTTLER. Or check the website, rottler.com. 877-ROTTLER, Rottler Pest Solutions.
It was 1989, my thoughts were short, my hair was long. Caught somewhere between a boy and man. She was 17 and she was far from in between. It was summertime in northern Michigan.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
In California, there's a nonpartisan think tank titled the Pacific Research Institute. It is now under the directorship of Dr. Wayne Weingarten, PRI Senior Fellow in Business and Economics, and he just came out with a book titled No Way Home, The Crisis of Homelessness, How to Fix It with Intelligence and Humanity. Wayne, glad to have you join us, sir.
Thanks for having me. I should say thanks for promotion, but actually Sally Pipes is our president. But thank you.
I'm sorry, you said what? You broke up just a little bit.
Oh, I just said Sally is our president, but absolutely.
I'm sorry. I thought I said I thought I read that you were the director. Maybe I misstated there in the process. I apologize. So let's first of all get into some of the things that we before you joined us, we were breaking down some of the homeless issues and primarily at that time focusing on vets, some 40,000 across the nation estimated to be homeless. And we have now something like $87 million going to take care of illegals coming into the country. At first blush, what's wrong with that picture?
Well, what we have, and especially in California, you see it kind of at its worst, but you see it in other cities as well, New York City, Portland, Oregon, in Seattle. We have policies that just aren't kind of focused on kind of addressing the problems that each individual kind of homeless group. There's different people who fall into homelessness for different reasons, and we're not actually creating the right incentives to help each one of those groups effectively. And in the case, especially in, out west, where we have this growing right to live on the street, we're actually creating a constitutional right to live on the street and sleep on public property, sleep on the sidewalks. We're actually incentivizing in a very perverse way homelessness and not creating the right environment to help people kind of get off of the streets and actually regain control of their lives.
So let me ask you directly, $87 million, how much do you think $87 million would help with the homelessness just in LA or San Francisco? Would it just be a drop in the bucket, or would it could it be some value? And we've got the illegal issue. That's an entirely different thing. I'm not trying to draw you into that issue, but that's where Americans are having a hard time. If we're putting $87 million in the hands of illegals, we got Americans on the streets. Don't seem to be taking care of them.
Right. Well, and I think that's the most important thing to focus on. I mean, we could do hours talking about waste in the federal government, mismanagement. That those are always, unfortunately, very fun things to talk about, but very sad at the same time. And you're throwing, I mean, in some ways, it's not the money as much as how we're spending the money that's the problem.
Right.
California is spending the money. I mean, their auditor just came out with a report saying state has no idea how different parts of the government, there's dozens of agencies, are spending the money on homelessness. So we're not even keeping track of the money that we are spending. And we're not availing ourselves of a lot of private nonprofits that have very innovative ways to help. California isn't availing itself.
Let's get into with what you were saying a moment ago. And I know we've all seen the pictures and heard the stories about San Francisco, camping out on the streets and feces and urine everywhere, and even the poop patrols going out. And L.A. has the situations. Seattle does. New York, as you said earlier. And you point out in part of that in San Diego, even not far from the gates of Disneyland, you got tent cities existing. Where is the disconnect that we know we need to do something, and that they continue, as you said, they're basically giving them rights and permission to camp anywhere they want, sleep, and you cannot you can't move them and clean up the area.
Right. I think it's just a faulty approach to the problem. So as opposed to, I think here's a perfect example. And in some of these policies, you don't even recognize how they connect to the homelessness problem. But you create a legal right for someone to sleep on the streets. Now a law enforcement officer really can't move somebody who's on the street. Now that person has a substance abuse problem. They also, in California, have reclassified theft. So under $950, that's no longer a felony.
Right.
Now it's a misdemeanor. It's not prosecuted. So now you're giving people who have substance abuse problems, who are homeless, a means to sustain themselves by stealing in the drugstores that are hit up. They're not going to defend themselves. It's not worth it, the danger. Law enforcement isn't going to prosecute. It's just catch and release. And so now we're actually subsidizing a very destructive lifestyle. And I think some of it is just this unintended consequence, not thinking through all of these policies and not recognizing that sometimes tough love is the most important type, and that we need to use enforcement of the law as an opportunity to get people into programs that can help them.
So I hear that you're saying, and particularly in California, the laws themselves are exacerbating the issue, and the title of your book has subtitle. It's titled No Way Home, folks, No Way Home, but that how we can fix it with intelligence. Let's begin with intelligence. How are we going to do that? I keep hearing money being thrown at it, but I don't know if it's being used, as you pointed out, in an intelligent fashion.
Well, to me, intelligence, and one of the things I discovered when we were writing the book, is in Los Angeles, the cost to build an affordable home, right, an affordable apartment, one unit, because of all the regulations, it actually costs more to construct one unit than the median cost, the average cost of an apartment in Los Angeles. So it costs you more to create affordable housing than actually housing costs. You know, that's not intelligent.
No, no. And but some will say, what's the economy? The landlord, if they own it, they're going to get what they can, or the person who has the property wants to get as much as they can and bring in the money. You might get fewer and fewer square footage for more and more dollars, but it's entrepreneurship, private enterprise, whatever you want to call it.
But the costs here are driven by regulations. And they're driven by restrictions, so that the zoning regulations are so tight, it takes so many years to build. That's what's driving up the cost. It's not, you know, a beneficial process where everyone's getting wealthier and entrepreneurship. That's not what's happening. What's happening is we're over-regulating. We're over kind of imposing unnecessary costs. And so you price people out of homes. Right? And so from an economic perspective, some of the homes that are, you know, if you have an adverse life event and you live in California, you may end up on the street, whereas if you were in Missouri, you would be just fine.
Right, right. And you made a good point there. And it's always troubled me that folks who work all their lives, save up, they've taken care of things, they got their kids through school, they paid all their taxes and everything, and then they have an adverse health event, like you say, and suddenly the insurance won't cover it, and suddenly they're slammed to the floor, basically.
That's right. And this is something that is a tragedy across the country. But when you make your state unaffordable the way California has, you just exacerbate that process.
Well, I hear the only thing you got then to do with it is throw more money at it.
Well, and that's why more money doesn't help, right? Because you're just throwing money at a situation that can't get better. So you've got to fix the structure of the situation before we can actually meaningfully address the problem.
You're listening to Wayne Weingarten, and the name of the book is No Way Home. It's available now. You also talk about how we could fix this with humanity. I mean, we all, I think, unless you just have a black heart, you care about other people, and even you're thankful that there, but by the grace of God, I could be in those shoes.
Absolutely. And some of it is taking the opportunity when you to use the law as a means of connecting homeless people with services that they need, especially those who are suffering from mental illness or from substance abuse. Because if you're homeless because of hard times, there's resources out there, and you're going to be incented to go and find those and try to get back up on your feet. But if you're suffering with substance abuse, you're not thinking rationally. And what California has done, and that's a big mistake, and hopefully the rest of the country doesn't do the same, is that we create the inability to use the law as a means to connect with those people. So that if I am defecating in the subway, which happens in San Francisco too much, or there's drug needles and you're using drugs in public, the law should be able to come in and arrest you. But as opposed to going to kind of jail, what we need are homeless courts, where you can actually sentence someone to drug rehabilitation.
Right.
And in fact, if you successfully complete it, let's expunge your record, get you back on your feet so you can, again, get back on your feet and earn a living.
That'd be a great solution if we could see it through. And you mentioned, of course, back to the situation where people are just defecating, urinating everywhere. You have businesses in the area that have, you know, they relied on tourism, and now they don't come in, and then they have to shut up. So then shut down, and then you got people who had a job. Now they're out of a job, and the cycle just accelerated.
And the cycle gets worse.
Yes.
There's so many different anecdotes of conventions saying, you know what, I don't want – we've come to San Francisco for decades, but we don't want to anymore. The allure of being there is gone.
Yeah.
And that's a tragedy.
I want to thank you very much for taking time. Again, the title of the book is No Way Home: The Crisis of Homelessness, How to Fix It with Intelligence and Humanity. We obviously just scratched the surface of the book, but Wayne, I do appreciate you spending time with us, sir.
Oh, thank you so much.
You bet. Wayne Weingarten is the co-author of that book, No Way Home. Like I said, it's available now. We're going to take a break. When we come back, some of you might know that in my years in television, I did spend, quote, time on the street as, again, I insist, quote, being homeless. There's a big difference between what I did and those who are actually on the street forever. But I think there are some points we can draw and some parallels and maybe some insight that is valuable. That's coming up. Please stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I mentioned in the interview we had in the preceding segment that it's not good if you get kind of smug that, you know, I have a home and those people would have one if they'd work harder. That doesn't always work that way. There are people that are working the hardest they can, putting the money together the best way they can, and maybe either the size of the family or the job they have or the pay they get, all of that creates a greater pressure on them that many of us don't have. And even though if you're doing great and swell, you could be hit by a catastrophic illness in your family or something of that nature, and it just sucks up all the money you have. I mean, if your child comes down with something that you need to spend everything you've got to help save that child, you're going to do it. And then what situation are you left in? And, of course, we have other factors that always figure in. And you might have to settle for a lesser home, but you still have a home. But then there are those who don't have one. And some of them are on the street that are mental cases. And we did have a safety net at one time that may not have been that efficient, but it helped some. I think we're missing that at this point. And I'm not talking about a free, liberal give out, everything is all sunshine and roses thing. It's got to be structured. It's got to be given to those who really need it and not abused by those overseeing it. Some years ago, while working for a television station as an anchor in St. Louis, I went on the streets for, quote, 60 hours homeless. Now, let's get something straight. I'm out there posing as a member of the homeless, and I was wearing dirty, torn clothes and had mud and so forth all my face. In other words, looked totally unclean, unkept. And we did it in one area where I was sleeping overnight, sleeping on a piece of cardboard, and we had to have a police officer assigned our crew because there had been someone going around stabbing and attacking the homeless. Later turned out to be another homeless person, but at the moment, time, we didn't know. And then in some of the groups of the homeless I would gather, sometimes I was welcomed in, sometimes I wasn't, because they're leery of any stranger that they don't know for a period of time. Also visited some of the facilities that are open to provide food and shelter. Some folks use them, some don't. They don't like going in, they have to give up their belongings, they don't want to. So they crawl in up under vacant buildings or under some loading dock where they won't be seen, or a garage, parking garage, wherever they can. I was doing this in January, and it was darn cold, very, very cold, and I didn't request extra clothing while I was out there. And at one point, sleeping along the riverfront, some guys had a bonfire where they were gathering. They had a settlement along the riverfront, which had been there for some time and remained there for some time after. And they had trash cans, fires in them, and everyone would gather around and get a little warmth. But everyone's concerned about what possessions they have. They don't want anyone else near them. Don't want to share them, generally. And I would do some panhandling to see how that went. Some of the bars in a particular area, and people would come out and mock me, throw pennies at me. Now, I don't always give money to a homeless person. First of all, I think, you know, especially if they look fully healthy, they could go get a job. Now, that's a qualification I put in that I don't really know that's true. Maybe because they have a mental condition, no one is going to hire them. Physically, they look good, but they think, I can't have this person in the midst of other people. So we don't know the story. And the whole idea of the homeless series was to kind of paint a portrait of these folks and what they go through. But, and I cautioned during the series, and I restate again, I'm on the street for, quote, 60 hours. The only time I was in a vehicle was to get us quickly from one spot to the other, where it might be 3 to 5 miles away, and to expedite, I would get in the car and be driven there and then dropped off to look for food and garbage cans or whatever the issue was that normally happened in that area. But the other thing, and this is the most pressing thing, my, quote, being homeless on the streets does no comparison really to the reality, because the reality of the folks out there, they don't have an option. I'm still getting a fat paycheck. I have a nice home to go to when this is over. My family's being cared for. I had no concerns other than my personal safety while out in the midst of some that might be a little difficult to deal with, at, using a polite phrase. But I wasn't destined to be there forever or had to be rescued by some fashion. That mindset is everything, because there are those on the street that they have no hope, they see no hope, and they just languish. And each passing day and then year becomes a deeper and deeper trauma for them, inescapable. And if they weren't mentally disabled or mentally challenged, it comes in anyway in waves in some cases. You have to always keep in your mind when you see someone like that, there, but by the grace of God, could be you or a member of your family down the road. I would not be so quick to judge, but yet there are those out there who could be doing something else and they just decided not to. It's an individual issue. But still, let's find some way to help without just throwing money away. Coming up in the next hour, we are going to focus again on the illegal crisis at the border not being admitted by Biden.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.